I could do that.
Yeah, you could do that.
Morning. We're into the concert thing. Nice. Nice tone. And you haven't heard this for a few years, huh? Got jacked by the Schmelzenbacher.
Yeah, this was going to be my new ending bass to replace the Stanley Clark that I've been doing for 20 years.
Well, 10. Only 10, isn't it?
It's working on 2-0, man.
Is it really? You've been the host of the Sunday Night Jazz for 2-0?
20 years ago, I ran into the station manager of KMXT at the liquor store.
Ah.
And while we were discussing the proper pronunciation of Sonny Rollins / Rollins' last name, he suggested or jewed me into, well, if you don't like it, why don't you do your show? How about your show? I said, well, okay, we'll give it a try.
Man, you got a mind like a trap, JB. JB Heineman's in the studio this morning to tell us a little bit about a knockdown, dragout, good old show that you got a chance to see a few years ago. So, Stanley Clark got replaced by Christian Scott, who was there.
Yes, Christian Scott was there. He's a young New Orleans trumpet player. Well, that was 10 years ago now. We're talking about right after the Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans.
Yeah.
The performance or the festival that I attended, it's called the Jazz and Heritage Festival now. And it's the second biggest event that occurs in New Orleans every year, second only to Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Of course. And
thousands of people go there.
Yes, indeed. And this one was particularly well attended.
Because it was post-Katrina.
Yeah. Not only attended by the audience people, but also virtually anybody that they asked as performers to come wanted to help out the town.
Oh, you bet.
And also, when we got there, we flew to Dallas and rented a car and drove because the airport in New Orleans was still goofed up. This is 6 months after the hurricane, the following spring.
So it was still just trashed.
The whole town was completely trashed and had an extremely ominous and unpleasant smell.
Yeah. And
almost all the stoplights still weren't working. 6 months later.
Well, it's nice to be in a rent-a-car in that situation, I guess.
Well, they had some different ways of pronouncing FEMA, none of which I can say on the air.
So this is the first time you decided you're going to go to New Orleans for the show.
No, I used to live there. I lived there for most of the year of 1977. It was shortly after I got out of college.
Now, you're well-known in the community as a musician. You grew up as a young flute player. What, didn't you play the trombone or something?
No. I do like playing the flute, but I was a clarinet major in college. And my first wind instrument was the alto sax.
Really?
But the first instrument I learned to play was the piano. Because when you're real little, I was 4 years old and I started taking piano lessons. And when you're real little, your hands are too small for saxophones and clarinets and flutes. So started out on the piano, and as soon as I was in fourth or fifth grade and my hands were big enough to play the alto sax, that was it for the piano lessons.
Cool. Yeah. You're a happy kid. So you're in New Orleans for what? Were you working there, playing music?
I was working. I lived on the second block of Bourbon Street with a balcony apartment. I worked in restaurants for, $2 an hour or something.
Nice.
My favorite one was working the all-night shift at Jimmy's Coney Island, just a block away at 100 block of Royal Street. It was the after-hours spot for the so-called talent from the female impersonator shows.
And this could be a whole new fundraiser.
And also, also the hookers. It was well attended by the Central District New Orleans police officers.
We're going to talk about music, though. Okay. Well, even though I'm thinking Jimmy's Coney Island must have been a hot spot to go to. So you're down there, you playing music on the side, where you're just kind of slinging hash?
I had just finished my third year as a clarinet major at Indiana University, the largest music school in the world, and I needed a break, and it was in the middle of the winter, and I just hitched to New Orleans. And
ever been there before?
Nope. I just wanted to go as far south as on I-55 as I could.
Really? What'd you get, the Dodge Dart loaded up?
Nope. Stuck out my thumb.
Really? Yeah, that's a good way to travel back in the 70s. So I don't know the back history of this deal. I spent a lot of time in the South, but when did it change its name over? When did the thing start? Has it been going on for a long time?
It has been going on for a long time. I'm not sure when they changed it to the Blues and Heritage. I did attend one other one about 5 years after I lived there in the early 80s. I hitchhiked down from Kodiak with a girlfriend, and we went to the, it was by coincidence. I didn't know the festival was on. It was just, we were headed to Florida and we stopped in New Orleans.
And there it was.
And it was hard, it's very difficult to find a place to stay. Christian Scott's starting to end here. Just one thing you've just been listening in the background to, a composition from Christian Scott, who's the trumpet player leading the band. It's called Katrina's Eyes.
So you got a chance to see, at this post-Katrina show, you got a chance to see Christian Scott.
Yes, I did, shortly before he made that recording that we just heard.
So how many thousands of people make the pilgrimage down for a post-Katrina show? I mean, were the shows 20,000, 50,000, what?
I would say there was probably in the 20-plus range at the main stage. And then this was held at the Louisiana racetrack there in New Orleans up by Lake Pontchartrain. So there was approximately 10 stages going on at all times.
Where did they house all these people?
It was tricky because, you know, again, a lot of the hotels and stuff, for instance, downtown,
were gone.
Well, no, they weren't gone, but they were filled with people who were getting FEMA vouchers,
yeah, right,
or whatever, so that they were still 6 months later living in hotels and stuff because of their power and utilities and all kinds of other problems with the regular, you know, fairly dilapidated housing before Katrina anyway.
Well, a lot of arena shows, you know, you go to that's tent housing. You know, you go out into a field somewhere and everybody camps out for 3 days. But New Orleans, I'm assuming, is not like that.
Yeah, it's, I don't know what people did that, you know, we had a place to stay in the French Quarter.
Oh, nice.
And so that first weekend. And so we were right down on Decatur Street downtown in the Quarter. And by the way, the French Quarter was untouched by the flooding.
Right.
And then, of course, we several times drove back and forth, driving around town, went past what at the time was definitely the Not-So-Superdome.
Yeah.
Which was an infamous
reminder of all of us as to the power of the Katrina. That was just a horrifying bunch of images back then. So
this festival... For a while, the city, the commerce people, and the people that ran it were thinking, well, there's no way that this town can recover in time to be able to put on this big festival. And then as it got closer to the time, they said, oh, no, you got to do it. And sure enough, you know, not only did a lot of people want to go there and financially support the festival and the rebuilding of New Orleans, but also all the musicians from around the world that wanted to come and show up and perform there in order to, where was my list? It's over there, Mike. Yeah, all kinds of very famous popular musicians, you know, beyond just the jazz and blues and heritage genre, wanted to go there. One afternoon, I think it was a Saturday afternoon, it's a two-week weekend event, I saw Bob Dylan band, Bruce Springsteen's band, and Dave Matthews on the same stage in the same afternoon. They didn't play together. They didn't jam with each other, but it was
impressive. I'd say you got your money's worth of the deal.
Yes, indeed. Also, I'd never even heard of Christian Scott, even though he'd been around, even though he was very young, he'd already been making some recordings, and I was unfamiliar with him. That was the first day. He played with a college, high school, all-star clinic band from the area. Oh, another thing about this festival that was really interesting was that it was the first time that most of the local New Orleans musicians had a chance to go back, had been able to come back to town. They've been scattered throughout the South, as Jerry Jeff would say. And so this was kind of a reunion for a lot of these people too, because they'd been out of work. And you know, New Orleans has a tremendous and very thriving musical scene. It's one of the best.
So if you're there for jazz, you get a chance to see Dylan Springsteen and Dave Matthews too. But some of your favorites were lined up in the shows, right?
Yes, indeed, including Herbie Hancock. That was probably the most remarkable of all of the performances I saw. Some of it had to do with the venue. It's one of those things where, like, if you're having a political rally, you don't want to rent a hall that's too big because then it seems like it's empty. Right. You don't want it to be too small because you don't want to have not have all the people that want to come in. You want it to be just packed tight, just right. And Herbie, for some reason, was in this fairly large tent right next to the main concourse of the racetrack. But it was way, way too small. And he was late in the day, in the evening. It was way too small of a venue to cram accommodate people. How many people.
How can you get a tent that's big enough for 20,000 people?
Well, at the same time, up against Herbie, I don't know who else it was, over on the main stage, was some other pop person, you know, that kept the multitudes away.
Yeah.
But still, I think most people like us, I was down there with my friend Young Londa, and she'd gotten us these really good tickets, these special... very special. Yeah, right,
yeah,
the Super
it.
Chief tickets. But anyway, the rest of the seating, most of the seating in this tent was general admission. So there was just people packed in there, and the security wouldn't let Herbie on stage and let him start to play until they cleared the aisles.
Yeah.
So that took him quite a while. It cut quite a bit of time off of Herbie's set. Finally, Herbie came out, and he goes, "Well, glad to see that y'all are excited to hear us play." He kind of made a, and everybody just cracked up immediately.
Well, what about the 400 people they ousted to make aisles, though? They were probably, like, incensed hanging out on the outside of the tent.
Well, it was a matter of who, you know, first come, first serve.
If you're in the aisle, you're out.
Yes, and the security people were cool, and nobody got, you know, started pounding on each other that I
saw. So did you get, like, a Super Chief hat, a special deal?
I probably could have, but I wasn't really. I did save a lot of memorabilia from my programs and stuff like that, which is a sort of a habit of mine over years.
Apparently it's in my office somewhere.
Yes, I gave it to a good friend of mine who is a manager of a public radio station here in Kodiak. And that was 10 years ago. And
it is Earth Day, you know, it's a recycling day.
I'll tell you, Mike, let's just consider it to be a gift.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to start to I'm going to play a tune. We're going to encourage you to give us a call, by the way, at 486-3181.
Yeah,
KMXT.
Help support us. We're going to shift the deal.
Yeah, I'm going to play a tune. There's only two tunes that I remember from Herbie's remarkable set at the 2006 Jazz and Heritage Festival. And I'll never forget the first tune. It was a really low-key one, and everybody grooved after all the tension of setting up. This is Herbie Hancock and Cantaloupe Island from his Empyrean Isles LP. Give a listen. We'll be right back. So we don't have, we've got some time constraints here as well. This performance.
We're like Herbie Hancock, man.
Yeah, Herbie Hancock.
So we had people in the aisles, Pam and Joel, yes, they had to get out of the way.
They're pounding into the building to contribute.
They don't have their Super Chief tickets.
They don't have a laptop or an overly intelligent phone, so they can't sign up online at kmxt.org, but they could give us a call.
I'm assuming from that comment you make all the time that you do not own a super intelligent telephone.
No, I don't.
By choice.
Yes, I choose not to earn the outrageous gobs of money required to make
to keep Bill, them alive.
No, to make Bill Gates' yacht payments on a continuous and lifelong basis.
I knew if I gave you an opening, you'd fill it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, young man. So, yeah, Herbie started with this old tune from Empyrean Isles, the Cantaloupe Island, and then towards the end of this shortened set by security, he played this, and that's what we walked out of. Outside the venue, there was just thousands of people dancing away to this tune. You may recognize it. This is Chameleon from the Headhunters LP. Oh, no, it isn't.
That one's a good one, too. Here we go. The chameleon just changed its skin. I think every person on the whole planet thought that they were a bass player when this song came up, you know?
I played the baroon. It might have been the beginning of air bass.
It was the best. Funkiest bass on the planet. Well, and the bass player was... Don't you remember him sitting up there?
Oh, the bass player at the performance. I thought you were asking who the bass player was on the studio recording that we're playing. Oh, it was Marcus Miller.
Yeah.
Very well-known sideman with other people. He's also made recordings under his own name.
New Orleans boy.
Yes, and he's produced a lot of stuff. He also, at that performance, he played the bass clarinet in addition to a couple of different...
So you had 45 minutes of sheer fun.
It was a lot of fun. It should have been longer. And Derby wasn't able to start soon enough. But by then we were. It was really hot. It was super hot inside the tent with 600 people in there and New Orleans weather, spring weather. So we decided to leave. We decided to leave the venue a little early because they had speakers just right outside the tent and the whole concourse area was just jammed with people partying and dancing together, and it was just very cool, man. It was the very coolest.
So what is it about the line in this music that makes you just want to move?
I don't know. It's a simple repeating line, so that might be part of it.
Well, you're a classically trained guy, right?
Yeah.
Does it cross over? I mean, do you have like a war at Indiana University? Is there like the classical guys and then the jazz guys are over here? But do you both play the same?
You know what I mean? I don't know. No, I'm not sure what you mean.
Seems like there's two different camps that you people that are trained classically don't go in and play other forms of music.
In general, we don't actually, classical is not what didn't used to be referred to. It was orchestral music and chamber music, etc., and older compositions from Romantic era and classical era composers, referred to as legit.
Really?
Yeah, so if you were in the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, you were a legit player. And then if you were in the union book and played bar mitzvahs and weddings and rock and roll and whatever, the parties, you know, that was just, you were considered to be a jobbing musician. And anyway, there has always been a divide between jazz musicians and legit players, and mainly it involves reading notes. In other words, a lot of musicians that play improvisational music, not just jazz, they are considered to be playing so-called by ear,
right?
Whereas the legit players are pretty much prisoners of the printed page. And for them to play something just by ear, other than scales and exercises and stuff, they're intimidated. So there is a divide, without a doubt.
I just remember the old Disney movie. There's an old Disney cartoon of Classical Island versus Jazz Island. Really?
Okay.
It's awesome. You should watch it sometime.
I'm familiar with that.
So you're wandering out of the tent. I mean, people are still in there.
We're boogieing out of the tent.
Yeah. So this is his outro. He's up on the stage, and you're still playing, and you're out in the 20,000 people
walking away,
streaming along,
checking out the groove there. We weren't really trying to beat the rush out after he was done. Who knows? He might have stretched the schedule. You know, these schedules are tough on these festivals because somebody else is supposed to come in after you and play on the stage. Although I can't imagine wanting to follow a Herbie Hancock act. No, this was very special, and it was emotional too for a lot of the people in the audience. You know, everybody was just teared up over how impressed they were that all these musicians showed up trying to help get New Orleans back on its feet after this disaster. And it was just an amazing experience. That's all I can say. We also toured the city. You know, we went to the Lower Ninth Ward, the infamous, where the flooding was the worst. And, you know, it was kind of creepy and also kind of, you know, bad taste to be, you know, white people in a rental car from Alaska going and gaping at the
poverty
devastation.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. So you've been back though, right? After this, you went back in the 80s?
Back to New Orleans?
Yeah.
Well, this was in 2006. I
went from 77 to 82.
I've been to New Orleans three times. I was there for about a year in 77 when I lived there. And then about 5 years after that, I was from Kodiak, which I now.
Right.
And then 20 years later, after the Katrina thing, it was young Londa whose impetus it was. She wanted to go there. Yep. I'm going to play one more to get us out of here. This is a very long tune, by the way, Chameleon. I'm going to play one more Herbie thing. He recorded this, I believe, it was his next album after this recording that we are listening to. It's very cool. I just got a copy of it from a friend of mine down in Northern Illinois. He sent it to me. This is Herbie Hancock's Thrust, and the tune is called Butterfly. By the way, you should give us a call, 486-3181. Pledge your support for KMXT.
We'll still be doing this next week. We're starting to fill up the list for people who have stories that they would like to share. So as you've probably heard throughout the week, there's stories from all kinds of different venues, all kinds of different musicians. And from what we hear from people, you're enjoying listening to them. So thank you for putting up with us and going along for the ride and hearing what some of your neighbors are doing or have done in the past and are looking forward to do in the future. And we're looking forward to many more years of being able to bring you this kind of programming. So if you haven't become a member yet, give us a call. After JB here, Angelique Grantham is going to be in. She put together a special show, a historical show about Fort Kodiak. And we'll be talking to her a little bit and then playing that half-hour story for you. It's pretty informative, pretty interesting. 486-3181. We'll be right back. I didn't. All right, JB, take your hand and get out of here.
How are y'all?
Hey, that was fun. Good stories. New Orleans.